Jefferson seizes on this explanation as well. He writes to Thomas Law, "Some have argued against the existence of a moral sense by saying that if nature had given us such a sense, then nature would have also designated the two sets of actions which are in themselves virtuous and vicious. The answer is that nature has constituted utility to man." That's the key theme in Hume. "Utility to man, the standard and best of virtue. Men living in different countries, under different circumstances, different habits and regimes, may have different utilities. The same act, therefore, may be useful and consequently virtuous in one country, which is injurious and vicious in another differently circumstanced." Now, there's also a problem with the Humean view of moral sense as instinct, and that is that all instincts can't be improved. There's no possibility of cultivation or progress. When Jefferson faces this challenge, he physicalizes the moral sense into a limb. That way it can be exercised and strengthened. Again, to Peter Carr, he writes, "The moral sense or conscience is as much a part of a man as his leg or his arm. It is given to all human beings in a stronger or weaker degree, as force of members is given them in a greater or less degree. It may be strengthened by exercise, as may any particular limb of the body." In this case, exercise takes the form of expanding the moral imagination, and that's done imaginatively through reading. Fiction turns out to actually be better than history, and for Jefferson, no fiction is better than sentimental fiction, and in particular, and I quote, "the writings of Sterne particularly form the best course of morality that ever was written." And here we see Jefferson's eclecticism. He's faced with a problem in moral sense doctrine. There's about three different solutions. Jefferson embraces all three. Many people have seen this as a sign of Jefferson's intellectual inconsistency or shallowness. In fact, they're thinking of Jefferson the wrong way. Jefferson's not a systematic thinker. He's an artist. He's an amateur collector of ideas. He uses these things, he deploys these concepts to get work done, not to reach final solutions. Okay, I want now to turn to Jefferson's religious beliefs. And again, they're quite radical. I mean, on the one hand, he is certainly in some sense orthodox. He's an Anglican vestryman for all, at the least. He actually runs a parish. And he generally tends to keep his religious views to himself, wisely so, because they are quite out of step with that of most Americans at the time. And indeed, he was not entirely successful and was castigated for it. In the famous election of 1800, the Federalist National Gazette ran the following huge little advertisement, not so little. In bold capital letters it states, "The grand question stated, shall I continue in allegiance to God and a religious president, obviously John Adams, or impiously declare four capital block letters, Jefferson, and no God," with three big, bold exclamation points. And in fact, in many ways, Jefferson's religious views exemplify what the historian Peter Gay has called the Enlightenment's Christian paganism. Certainly, he's dismissive towards traditional evangelical Protestantism. In the wake of religious revivals in Virginia, he writes to Dr. Thomas Cooper, "In our Richmond, there is much fanaticism, but chiefly among the women. They have their night meetings and praying parties where, attended by their priests and sometimes by a henpecked husband, they pour forth their effusions of their love to Jesus in terms as amatory and carnal as their modesty would permit them to use to a mere earthly lover." Well, I don't want to suggest that he's, in fact, hostile to Jesus. He's not. He warmly embraces the ethical doctrines of Jesus, but what he rejects is his divinity, which is called Arianism. That's the peculiar heresy he believes in, which argues that Jesus is just a man who is particularly morally insightful. As he writes to Benjamin Rush, "To the corruptions of Christianity I am indeed opposed, but not to the genuine precepts of Jesus himself. I am a Christian in the only sense he wished to be one. Sincerely attached to his doctrines and preferring, in preference to all others, ascribing himself every," and this is italicized, "human excellence, and believing he never claimed any other." And Jefferson, in fact, comes up with a strategy to recover the wisdom of Jesus, which is essentially to strip the Bible and the Christian tradition of all of its theology, of all of the writings of the church and church fathers, and leave nothing but the pure, unadulterated writings of Jesus. And in this way, he clearly sees Jesus as the sort of Hebrew Socrates. He writes to Adams, "We must dismiss the Platonists and Plotinists, the Stagirites and Gamalielites, the Eclectics, the Gnostics and Scholastics, the Essences and Emanations, the Logos and Demiurges," obviously rejects Trinitarianism, We must reduce our volume to the simple evangelists, the select, even from them, the very words only of Jesus. And Jefferson, in fact, did this. He kept with him a scrapbook that he cut out from various Bibles of the exact sayings of Jesus.